And welcome to Tuesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. He is Paul Dottino. I'm Lance Medow with you for the next 60 minutes as we'll be breaking down all the latest with respect to the New York Giants. We'll get to your phone calls as well. 201-939-4513. If you can't get to the phone, you can also chime in via Twitter using hashtag GiantsChat. We'll try to address as many tweets as possible over the next 60 minutes as well. So the team is ready to break for the bye. The Giants players just spoke with reporters recently before we came on here on the air, so we'll get into that. We'll also continue to recap a little bit of the Rams game. I know that was discussed at great length yesterday. And look ahead to what lies ahead following the bye week, a three-game homestand for the Giants as they will have the Eagles, the Bengals, and the Bears. So a lot that we're going to tackle over the next 60 minutes. So glad that you can spend part of your Tuesday with us here on Giants.com. A number of players spoke in the locker room, Paul, and I mean, yeah. The mindset, I think, for the most part is not that a player is ever going to complain that the bye week is coming up, but the bye coming at a good time. However, on the flip side, you know, this team is starting to gain some momentum with two straight victories, and you always wonder, can a bye week interrupt that flow, considering how well the defense is performing?
Well, that was my question, Lance, because most of the media was trying to get the guys to say, well, you just won two in a row, but the bye week is coming at a good time because you've got some injured players who are going to be coming back, and you're going to get a chance to come back against the Philadelphia Eagles. What good or how much good will a rest do you? That's the take from most of the media. My take was, and I've been around this game a long time, especially defenses, they love to build momentum. And the Giants' defense, the last couple of weeks, they've been getting takeaways, they've been getting sacks, they've been getting some pressures. They have held on to the last two games in the fourth quarter on the final drives to win games. So my question was, could this be a little bit of a detour in your momentum from a defensive perspective? And the only guy who would agree with me, and I talked to a handful of them, it was Dominic Rodgers-Cromartie, who admitted that, you know, you like the rest, but yeah, I understand what you're talking about. We are gelling. Our momentum is kind of coming together. We're starting to do some really good things here. He understood what I meant, and he did say that it's a double-edged sword. He admitted that can be a problem of losing the defensive momentum, because I think we would all agree, even though the Giants scored enough to win in L.A. or in London, and they scored enough to beat the Ravens 2 weeks ago and had a last-minute touchdown, the defense has had to hold on for the final seconds in each of those two plays. To me, the reason this team is 4-3, it's on their shoulders. They're the guys who have grabbed this thing by the throat and said, okay, come on, we're going to make a race out of this. So I'm thinking right now, they're the guys driving the cart. So I was more interested in what they had to say about this than I was necessarily offensive guys, if that makes any sense.
No, I completely agree. Listen, the defense has done a lot of the heavy lifting, Paul. It's been well documented. And how about going further back to 2015 and comparing what transpired last season to this season, the fact that you brought up these last two games. Well, what was the problem last season? The defense was on the field in the last possessions of games. The problem is the defense couldn't make the stops that they are making this year. They get an interception with DRC to close out the Rams game, and then in the Ravens game, they get a swatted ball away in the end zone to seal that game too. Those were the plays that were not happening in 2015. What was happening in 15 was the fact that you had last-second field goals or you had game-winning touchdowns in the final second. So that, to me, has been a big turnaround in terms of the defense coming through with the key plays that were lacking all of last season.
Well, I think, you know, this offense is supposed to be much better than it is. And it really hasn't, you know, taken the bull by the horns and won games yet. Now, again, I know they've had some late touchdowns. So I don't want to dispute the fact that, you know, Cruz had the touchdown, you know, that beat Dallas. I don't want to dispute the fact that, you know, Beckham scored that touchdown late against the Ravens. I don't want to take anything away from that. They did make some key plays in key moments. But as you just expressed, and as I have said many times, it's right now it's the defense driving this boat. I'm sorry, it is. And so for that reason, I was more curious about what those guys felt. And I get the sense that most of them want to get their brethren back healthy, and Darian Thompson is certainly a big part of that. Eli Apple could use the break on his groin and hamstring.
DRC too.
DRC certainly has been playing banged up, and he, you know, although again he admitted he liked the momentum that they have right now, and he does feel a little bit of concern about potentially stopping that. So I liked his frankness in discussing that.
Well, you mentioned injuries, and you mentioned the fact that after the bye, they can get back to 100%. Nat Burhey's another player I would throw out there, Paul, who's also been sidelined too, so they could potentially get two safeties back, depending on, of course, how things play out following the bye. You never can complain about that. You'd rather have a full go second half of the season. But, you know, clearly momentum is something that needs to be weighed. How much we read into that, you know, sometimes I feel like it's a convenient media narrative as opposed to what actually happens in football reality.
You know why? I'm not going to buy that. I'm not going to buy that because I do believe that work habits do translate to some degree out onto the field on Sunday. And if during the bye week you have too many guys who really do put their feet up and kind of relax – and, you know, go to Cabo, hello, Tony Romo. You do those kinds of things. I do believe that you're not as good as you could be when you come back. I do believe that.
Well, maybe from a physical standpoint, but you could also mentally, you know, still be studying up on the plays and everything while you're away.
I think if the quarterback's in Cabo, he's not studying much. I'm just saying. We don't have that trouble here with Eli.
No, I don't think anybody's going to bring that up.
But Jonathan Casillas, defensive captain, made a great point today when he said, I'm talking to these guys and I'm telling these guys, first of all, no matter where you go, stay out of trouble. He's giving them the coach speak. Stay out of trouble. Don't drink and drive. Make sure you're hanging with the right people. Make sure your mind is still focused and you understand that we got a bunch of games to play and you need to be ready for those games. And if you have an opportunity, you know, to get the brain thinking football and keeping yourself mentally sharp, that's not a bad idea either. You know, don't just mentally check out for the week. I do think there's something to be said for that. I've been around a long time, Lance, and I'm telling you, the players who keep thinking football, even if they are going to go down to the Jersey Shore or wherever they're going to go, if they're still thinking football, if it's still a presence in their minds, if they've still got their iPads and their film footage on it, those are the teams that seem to do better. I don't know if it's going to translate into wins and losses, but when they come back, they'll perform at a better level that first game back. Because when guys check out, they do check out for that week. It's not good.
You want to be sharp coming back that Monday because, remember, you essentially get the extra day. Most teams are studying film from the Sunday game on Monday. You're already looking ahead to the Eagles on Monday, and you're going to get a full practice in.
Exactly.
So you do. You definitely want to be sharp. But I also think that, and some of the players hit on this topic, and Casillas was one of them, Paul, who said it's also important because he was comparing this to the media. Whenever you do get a break during a lengthy NFL season, it's healthy, and it's important for guys to take a step back and sort of put things in perspective.
Well,
so there's certainly the pros and the cons to those circumstances.
No, nobody's going to wherever their vacation spot is and lacing up the shoulder pads.
Well, that's what I'm saying. That's why you got to get away from the game a little bit sometimes.
That they're not doing.
Yeah.
So I get that part of it, but I do think there's a balance there. And I'm not for guys just checking out for the week, not doing anything. I think that that's a bad idea.
Well, some of the players on this team are local anyway, so they're going to be around.
A lot of
Jonathan Casillas including. I mean, he's a local guy too, so not everybody's necessarily going to go out of town. Some take the chance to go away. I know, for example, Casillas brought up, you know, BJ, who is going to probably return to school, so that may be somebody that may go out of town, but he was also using him as an example. Hey, even though you go back to school, you're a professional player now, you have to think a little bit differently than when you're in college. So I thought that was an interesting example, how he took him to the side and explained to him, you know, how you treat the bye week in the professional level, in the professional realm, as opposed to when you're a collegiate student. And Most often than not, you don't even get the bye in college unless you're preparing for a bowl game and so forth. So certainly some differences that he brought to the forefront when he was addressing the media.
Funny note, I passed Robbie Gould coming out of the locker room today, and I looked at him and I said, so you work a couple of days and already you have another week off. And he laughed and he said, are you kidding me? I've already had six bye weeks.
It's true. But he's been working out during that time.
Yes, he has.
Which he also emphasized. To stay sharp, to anticipate a phone call that he may get. Yeah, sometimes it's just crazy. Or what about when a player gets traded during the middle of the season, Paul, and then you already had your bye with one team,
yeah,
and then you wind up having your bye again? Sometimes the schedule cooperates. Sometimes the schedule doesn't necessarily cooperate when it comes to that. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. Hashtag Giants chat. We're going to get to your phone calls. We're going to get to your tweets. And if you want to weigh in on the Rams game, what you saw out of that contest, certainly we won't shy away from that. Or if you want to look ahead to the Eagles and the upcoming Giants opponents, they're going to have a three-game homestand coming out of the bye. They got a lot of travel out of the way in this first half of the season. So it'll be very interesting to see whether or not the Giants could take advantage of not a lot of travel and wear and tear on their bodies over the next few weeks following the bye. But right now, let's open up the phone lines here at 201-939-4513. We got Richie on Long Island. He gets us going on Tuesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. Richie, what's happening?
Hey, guys. Good to talk to you.
Same here, Richie. So what do you have for us?
No, just wanted to talk about a little bit of the offense. Everybody knows how it's been as of late. It's been, like, stuttering at best. Rich Eisen said, and I know it's been quoted now, for a guy, Ben Magdalene, who has such a large play sheet, it just seems like he calls about, like, five of the same plays. That's all we're seeing is that shotgun run up the middle, the strong power run, just a whole bunch of slants, hitches, dump-offs to, like, the running back and tight end. And that's not going to cut it, like, the next stretch of the schedule, especially playing against the Eagles. The Eagles' defense, if the offense plays anywhere close to what it's been playing against the Rams or how it's been playing against the Vikings or Green Bay even, it's the Eagles are going to win again, like, hands down. There's no doubt. The way their defense is playing right now against the Giants' offense is just, it's a big difference. And I hope that, I know McAdoo said, they're over bye week. They're going to, look into some things really hard and change it. But some of the guys, what you have on the roster, are just not going to change. Larry Donnell's run-blocking ability, not going to change. We've been talking about him for, 2 years now, about his lack of ability. Maybe, put Jarrell Adams in, see what he can do.
I would think of the young guys who are on this team right now, Paul Perkins is the guy who's probably got the most upside during the second half of the season than any of the rookies. I mean, I'm counting Darian Thompson as a starter. I'm sorry. I don't even consider him a rookie. I should, because he is a rookie, but, he was supposed to be the starter anyway, and I'm sure he's going to get that job back as soon as he can get on the field, which may be the Philadelphia game, by the way. I would think that Perkins is the guy, though, of that group of guys. And I'm going to say Thompson is a starter and he's going to have impact, and we expect that. Perkins will be the guy who emerges and perhaps gives you a lot more than you expected, I think, over the second half of the season. He has shown some really good quicks like we saw during training camp, or should I say during the preseason. He got here late, as you know, from UCLA. And I think from talking to him, I get the impression he does feel much more comfortable, much more confident after being here for several weeks. It seems like he's got a much better grasp on the playbook. Now, my contention is I'd rather give him only a couple of chapters and say, look, just feel good about these chapters and keep him in a limited role.
Set of plays just for him, potentially.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Give him a limited role and just see if he can really get that down, because pass pro is going to have to be part of that too. If he's going to be in the game, you got to know other teams are going to say, oh, look, the rookie's in the game. Let's blitz. So he better be able to deal with that.
On you when you're young, yeah.
But I do think that you're going to see more of him.
Well, and I'll also add, and Richie, I didn't mean to cut you off. We'll let you continue. I mean, I think Jarrell Adams potentially could see more of a role too.
Possibly.
Specifically on a blocking standpoint, from a block. Because we have seen him go out as a receiver. Now, that was also part of when Donnell was out, coincided with injury. But if they do want to perhaps mix and match and see if they can bring in some new personnel from a blocking standpoint, would not surprise me if maybe Jarrell Adams gets a few more
opportunities. I would much rather Jarrell Adams than Larry Donnell run blocking. Because, as I said, we've constantly talked about it over and over. This guy, he's been through, coaches before, number of times, training camps, and still has yet the ability to develop run blocking. And you know what? He'll just never develop into it. I mean, it's been over years now, but time to, give Jarrell Adams a chance. Maybe, like I said, he's a better option. And he's a rookie. He has upside. Why not develop, young guys, as you said, like Paul Perkins, give him, some chances. I don't know why they have been shying away from using Darkwa. I thought he did, exceptionally good when he had his chance and, Rashad Jennings coming back from the injury. But, you know, again, one of the young players we also could be developing at the same time.
I would expect, and thanks for the call, I would expect Darkwood to get some more touches coming after the bye. And John yesterday was even talking about, and I think this is more likely than Jarrell Adams, I think Will Tye may get a shot to start ahead of Donnell before they start weaving in Jarrell Adams. That's just my thought, although in situations, certainly Adams' body could be used.
Well, and remember, he was known for his special teams play in college at South Carolina and his desire to want to block. And those are some things that we've talked about in the past, Paul. You can't always teach that. You have to have the inner drive to want to do some of those things.
But I also understand this, too. Despite his frame, and he's got a really big, boxy frame for a tight end, he's also coming out of South Carolina as a college player who's in his first NFL season, who doesn't quite have the power and the strength to compete against some of these full-fledged 6-7, 8-year veterans in the league who can overpower him.
Absolutely.
It's not just the moves and the knowledge and the experience, but let's face it, Jarrell Adams is going to get stronger over the next couple of years. He's not as strong as he's going to be. And at this moment, he's at a disadvantage against some of these guys in specific matchups.
Well, and I think what all three tight ends on this roster also have in common is, you know, the transition to get down low, shoulder pad level, to be in an ideal position to be comfortable to block. The problem is, and this is not necessarily anything they control, they're all relatively tall guys.
I'm going to ask you a question. Henry Hanoski's over here on the side. Henry, let me ask you a question. Seriously, how long were you in the NFL before you reached your maximum power and strength potential? Because as a rookie, you're not nearly as strong as you're going to be.
Every year you get stronger, but it takes a good 2 or 3 years.
2 or 3 years. See, that's and that's what I'm talking about. Jarrell Adams is a rookie tight end. Yeah, we know he was a good blocker in college, but that doesn't mean he's strong enough to block an NFL defensive end now. You know?
The transitional period.
Henry Hanoski, ladies and gentlemen, says 2 or 3 years before you start really getting as strong as you have to be. Thank you, Henry.
And you could say the same thing about a rookie running back, too, in terms of getting in prime shape, prime position to understand and be comfortable with blocking, too. You know, that comes over time as well. You can't just throw necessarily any young running back in. We talked about that with respect to David Wilson when he first arrived. There was the transition of learning how to pass protect. Not everybody walked in like Ahmad Bradshaw.
I love what Banks says. It's not just add water. I mean, you know,
there's
some maturing that goes on.
Yeah, you just, you know, water, and then all of a sudden it blossoms. It needs to be about patience and so forth. You have to take that into consideration. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. We got Sean in California. Sean, what's happening?
How's everyone this morning?
Hi.
Doing well, Sean. What do you have for us?
Oh, Eddie, just a few things. Recap the London game. I think that was an amazing stand on our defense. I think that was a good. We doubled up in turnovers. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that was Landon Collins' first interception.
It wasn't his first interception. Well, it was his first career touchdown in the National
Correct.
Football League.
Oh, yeah, that's what it was. His first career touchdown. Man, I counted those tackles, and I watched that play when it came to my highlights on my Xbox over and over again, and then that just shows our toughness on our.
Did we lose Sean? Sean, you still there?
I think he's gone.
Oh, but we may have lost Sean.
I will tell you, flashes of number 21, Tiki Barber, with the moves he was making toward the end zone.
Even in and out.
That was
and then
really
roll
cool.
It over into the end zone, yeah. It was a tremendous athletic play. I think between both interceptions, you know, being in the right place at the right time off the deflection, you know, DRC also, the fact that they walked away with 4 interceptions, 2 apiece, I mean, it says a lot about the positions that they put themselves in. However, I will say this, and I brought this up multiple times, Paul, and I think the pass rush did improve and was partially the reason why they were able to walk away with these interceptions. But the fact that the Giants had 3 takeaways in the first 6 games, and then all of a sudden it skyrocketed to 4 in the 7th game, is another example of how they come in bunches, takeaways, they're unpredictable, and it's still a very, very fluky statistic. You cannot rely on saying, well, if we don't make the stops, don't worry, because we're going to average 3 or 4 takeaways a game.
That's true.
You can't bank on that.
Although I would say this, because nowadays, as opposed to 2-3 weeks ago during the losing streak, you know that Apple's on the field, DRC's on the field, Collins is on the field, Leon Hall is on the field now as your dime back. You know, the Giants have a better collection. Again, don't you notice what a coincidence, huh? They win the first 2 games. Everybody's healthy. All of a sudden, the Redskins game, they lose 2 defensive backs. And all of a sudden now, during the 3-game losing streak, like 4 of their top 6 defensive backs aren't playing. And then the guys start getting back into the lineup. Oh, Giants just won two in a row. Gee, what a surprise. You know, they're healthy again. It does make a difference. Now, maybe because the guys were covered on the outside, those passes went into the middle. And then they got tipped up. And then Collins made the picks. Maybe, you know, those passes, if I don't want to name anybody, but let's say the fifth defensive back on your depth chart is covering the guy on the right sideline, the pass goes there instead of over the middle.
So the personnel dictating where the opposition is going to send.
So it does matter.
That's fair. Yeah.
It does matter.
No doubt. I agree with you. I think it's a valid point. Plus, what I also brought up, remember the game against the Saints, the two sacks that they had in that game was courtesy of the secondary.
Yeah.
Why?
Hall
because Spags. Because Spags could move guys up to the line of scrimmage and have them blitz. Now when all of a sudden these players are hurt, there's only so much flexibility that you can show in your defense.
And I'm going to tell you, I know that they've got some pass rush stuff in the schemes for Devon Kennard. And we haven't really seen that from him to this point. And part of it was because they had so many games without their healthy secondary.
We got Sean back on the line, so we'll allow him to come back on.
Okay.
I know, Sean, you wanted to say a few more things, and then you got cut off.
Hey, thank you.
No problem.
Thank you for letting me back on, guys. Yeah, before I say that, I wanted to let you guys know I learned so much from watching this, listening to the show every day.
Appreciate that.
You know,
thank you.
Giants callers who listen to it, I suggest you guys call in because once you call in, you just get addicted and you just keep on wanting to, you know, call in and spit your knowledge and see what you guys can, you know, come up with. But anyways, to get to my other point, in 2 weeks we play the Eagles, and I believe that game will be our hardest game yet this season and we'll be tested. And, you know, I think what needs to happen is, you know, our offense did good over versus the Ravens, and our defense been holding us down, not the best, but holding us down throughout the season. I think in the Eagles game, we need to really, both sides need to really click. I mean, like, you know, the season's halfway over. We finally have a chance to figure out our identity. You know, we know what we're doing wrong on. We need to improve on. You know, the penalties went down versus the Rams, and I'm grateful for that. Well, I want, like, agree or disagree, guys, and then if you guys can go into it. I think if we get that win over the Eagles, not only does that build extreme confidence, but, I mean, like, we play the next three games versus, you know, the three C's. I think we can roll into Pittsburgh with just our three losses. And not to overlook the three C's, but that's winnable games. And I just want to get you guys a agree or disagree, and I'll take you guys' answer out there. Thank you.
All right, Sean.
Thank you so
appreciate
much.
Appreciate the phone call.
I just want to add one thing to what he said about the Eagles. It's not just about offense and defense. Sproles is a very dangerous kick returner. And if you just put special teams on the back burner, you could get burned.
Well, I would even take it further. I think their coverage units are great, too.
They
have tight ends like Trey Burden. I mean, those players have been opportunistic for the last few years. The Eagles have been known for their special teams. It goes way beyond
without
Sproles.
Without doubt.
The defense has been opportunistic in returning and taking takeaways and moving them into touchdowns. You have to be very careful when you play a Philadelphia team because all three facets can be
How
very
could
opportunistic.
Any Giants fan ignore Philly special teams after what DeSean Jackson did a few years ago?
Absolutely, yeah. They have a very strong track record. It's not just against the Giants. It's against everybody. So Philadelphia's not a team that you take lightly. Not that anybody is. They're in the division. Giants are familiar, but it's been a very tough matchup over the last few years for the Giants, the Eagles. No matter where the game is being played, whether it be in Philly, whether it be here at MetLife Stadium, makes no difference. It's going to be a very tough game coming off the bye. There's a Philadelphia team that just knocked off the Vikings, handed them their first loss, and limited Minnesota, which was a very balanced team. Philadelphia's not going to play the Cowboys this week, and then after that, they're going to have the Giants. So two very important games for the Eagles coming up within the division, and that's what the second half of the season is going to be all about. Every single weekend is going to change the tone of this division. Let's head back to the phone lines here. We check in with Justin in New Jersey. Justin, what's happening?
Hey, man. How you guys doing today?
Doing well, Justin. How's things with you?
You know, I'm pretty good. And just to add to your point, I still have nightmares about that DeSean Jackson punt return.
Understandable.
Yeah.
Understandable. So what else you got?
So my question to you is about the running game between Rashad Jennings and Orleans Darkwa. And I know you have to keep Rashad in there because he's such a great blitz pickup in the passing game. But it just seems to me that when he gets the ball, he's tiptoeing before he even gets to the line of scrimmage. And I know the offensive line, it is what it is with them. But when you see Orleans get the ball, he's always falling forward. He's always at full speed, and he just always plays hard. And I don't understand why he's not getting any running time between. I know Perkins is stepping it up, but I just really don't understand what's going on with Darkhorn. I don't know if the coaches don't, if they're not relying on him, if they want him more as a special teams player. I don't get it at this point.
I'm not sure why Darkhorn's not getting more carries either, but I will share with you that I agree. When he gets the ball, he has a lower center of gravity. He squares his shoulders up. He hits the hole quickly. And he squares up and seems to always find a way to nuzzle forward for a couple of yards. I don't think, and I'd have to look up the numbers here, and I'd have to dig, and of course there's only a small sample, because he hasn't carried the ball a ton. But I would think his percentage of being tackled for a loss is probably the lowest of any Giants running back.
Off the top of my head, I would agree that you're probably right. I mean, I don't remember too many negative plays when he's had the football in his hands.
Because when he gets the ball, he gets back to the line of scrimmage quickly. He lowers his shoulders. He gets down and low. And there are times where he's kind of worming his way, if I could use that term, underneath the pile. And all of a sudden, you know, you think he had nothing, and he ran into a brick wall for no gain. And they mark it. Oh, guess what? 2 yard gain, second down and eight. You're like, how'd he get 2 yards out of that? You know,
right, exactly.
To turn nothing into something. Here's what I want to add, Justin. I know you wanted to add something. What I would throw in, because you're probably the second or third caller we've already received today that's asking why not Darkwa. I think it also is not so much productivity from the individual, but also the look that the Giants want to provide towards the opposition. What I mean by that, when Darkwa's in, he's not a threat to receive the ball as a receiver. Okay,
and he should be, because he's got the capabilities.
Well, and I'm not disagreeing with that, but let's face reality right now. He's not a threat as a receiver. Jennings can catch the ball out of the backfield and can run. And then if you're going to take Jennings out of the game, Justin, you're probably going to go with a Perkins or a Rainey, which have a different running style and bring something a little bit different to the table from a physical standpoint as well. So a lot of it, I think, has to do with providing different looks to the defense, as opposed to saying to themselves, well, you know, this guy turns negative plays into positives and so forth. I think a lot of it is to try to keep the defense on its toes as much as possible. And what Rainey and Perkins bring to the table is much different from Jennings, as opposed to what Darkwood brings to the table, if that makes much sense.
No, yeah, I can absolutely see that. And how those three running backs are also that dual threat, you know, receiving and running. And, I mean, I also have to say, I have been saying a lot of negatives about Rashad, but when he picks up those blitzes, it's unbelievable. He gives. I mean, I don't know if Darkwa can do it as well as he can.
Well, he's a bigger guy.
Another second, yeah.
He's a bigger back. He's better physically able to do so, and he's also been around a lot longer. He's got a lot more experience than any of the other Giants running backs. So, you know, if Eli's back there and he's pointing guys out and he's calling out, you know, what he wants to do, Rashad Jennings is probably going to be the guy who can make the adjustment the easiest.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with you wholeheartedly there.
Thank you. Appreciate
Justin,
the call.
Appreciate the call. Thanks so much for chiming in. All right, we're going to head back to the phone lines here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. We'll get to some of your tweets coming up as well. Hashtag Giants Chat. We got Mike in Florida. Mike, what's happening?
Hey, guys. I have four things, and you can take them any way you want. One, I'd like you to comment on what Kurt Warner said about the Giants schemes. Not Rich Eisen, but Kurt Warner. He's a really good guy, so I respect what he would have to say.
Before you continue, I don't mean to cut you off. What did Kurt Warner say?
I know.
Number one, the both of us don't know, and I'm sure a lot of members of the audience. So if you know what he said, if you could just tell everybody in the audience, and then we'll be more than happy to react to what he had to say.
He picked up from Rich Eisen and said, look, the head coach has been in the league now for a couple of years. Every defensive coordinator has studied him. They know what he likes to call and his pattern for calling them. He, the head coach, McAdoo, has got to start mixing up the plays and coming up with different schemes to offset the defensive schemes. So he was taking a shot, really, at McAdoo, but not in the same nasty way that I thought Rich Eisen did.
Mike, okay. Can I respond to that one?
Sure.
McAdoo's been an offensive coordinator for the Giants, well, not officially now this year, but he's been with this team for 3 years running the offensive show. He's been in the league, I believe it's 13 years now, as part of the whole NFL system as a head coach or an assistant. It's easy for us to forget he's a rookie head coach. And when you sit in that chair, and remember, he's never been a head coach at any level, not Division I, Division II, Division III college, or the NFL. It is so easy for us to forget that he's a rookie. And you know how we cut slack to players as rookies and we grade them on a curve and we tell you there's going to be things they got to learn, they got to mature, they're going to go through growing pains? Well, guess what? McAdoo's a rookie NFL head coach, and there's going to be stuff that he's got to learn, that he's got to go through, that he's got to experience. There are going to be growing pains. So if you want to tell me that his play selection needs to be tweaked some, I'm not going to argue with you, and I'm not going to disagree with you. What I'm going to say is, no kidding, he's a rookie head coach. He's got to learn how to do this.
Okay, I grant you that he's a rookie, except you're at the pro level. And when you're at the pro level, you have a much higher level of expectation. I buy your argument for a first-year head coach in maybe one of the lower college ranks, not when you get to the Ohio State level.
He'd never been a head coach, in NCAA Division I.
He worked under McCarthy for quite some time.
No, I get that, but he'd never been a head coach even in Division I. And a lot of these NFL coaches at least have had D1 college coaching experience. McAdoo has never been a head coach, not even of his Tecmo Bowl video game, you know? He's never been. So, please, I'm not disagreeing with the point. All I'm saying is you have to be a little bit more considerate of where he stands in his coaching career. That's all.
Mike, the one thing that I want to add to that is two points. Number one, I think that during the bye week when they call for their own self-scout, perhaps they will reevaluate. Are they tending to use too many three wide receiver sets, which is about 95%
of
the time?
Well, actually, I've already investigated that. And they like that because they believe that those three guys are among the best and most talented players on the field, and they want them on the field as much as possible.
Which makes sense, but maybe just a little bit more mixing and matching. Even if you bring it down to 87%, Paul, and I know that may sound minuscule, perhaps it just gives the defense a different look. So that's number one that I wanted to throw out there. Number two, it's interesting to note, you know, what Mike just brought up on the phone lines, and you look at the Packers' struggles, Paul. Not just this season, but last season. You know, perhaps it says something about just the Packers system that people are starting to catch on in terms of how they line up personnel, the flow of their offense. Because I don't think it's so much about the Giants as the fact that look at how teams are defending Mike McCarthy and the Packers. You know, Green Bay is not as fluid as it's been in previous years, too.
You don't even have to go back that far. McAdoo's had two previous seasons as the Giants' offensive coordinator, and they have been two of the most prolific offenses the Giants have ever put on the field. So, see, again, I find it very hard to criticize his offensive acumen based on the evidence that he's given the Giants the first 2 years of his tenure here. I'm more inclined to believe that if there is something that's sputtering a bit, it's because he's in a new role, having to call the plays while being a head coach, and he's got to grow into it with experience. To me, that is the only negative here, and time and experience will fix that if in fact you believe it's broken. I just think it's a developing process. That's all.
Well, and I think part of the reason why, and this has been well documented, why the Giants are not scoring nearly as many points as they were at this time last season. They're about a touchdown down, Paul. And I think part of it is, you know, everybody wants to point to the scheme and the personnel. A lot of it has to do with turnovers. I mean, look at more turnovers. And when I mean turnovers, I mean the lack of extra possessions.
Sure.
When you turn the ball over, you lose a possession.
Absolutely.
They were
you
not
do.
Doing that at this rate last season. So that, I think, is one clear reason why, the points are going to go down if you don't have nearly as many opportunities and possessions.
Okay, go ahead. We took a lot of time on that one point, but I think it's important to diagnose, or should I say dissect it.
Okay, the other 3 points. One maybe is an observation that somebody made to me. And he said JPP looks like he's heavier now than he was about 3 or 4 years ago. So has he lost about a tenth of a second? They recognize that he's getting the pressures, but he doesn't appear to be getting the sacks, and it looks like he's being handled one-on-one.
My observation, Mike, and I know this is going to sound really sour, I had a conversation with another NFL observer just this morning about this. I think he is getting held a lot, and it's not getting called. I don't want to make excuses because I don't think that does you any good, but I do think that both Vernon and JPP have shown with their pressures that they can get into the backfield, they can impact the play, and it's happening far too much for them not to get as many sacks as they should be getting. And it's my opinion, I'm seeing a lot of jerseys being grabbed, especially with those two guys, probably more so than anybody that I've seen in the Giants uniform since the days of Michael Strahan. And I would hope that over the second half of the season that these guys are either able to fight through that better or maybe those flags just get called a little bit quicker.
Okay. The other two points have to do with the offensive line. An observation from a group of guys that we all watch games with. It looks at certain times that Richburg is really getting overpowered, which, depending on who he's playing. And it's not necessarily that he's trying to take on two guys, but it looks like he's just backing up into Manning more frequently than, let's say, some other bulkier offensive centers. What's your observation on that, guys?
You know what? Yeah, that's a very astute observation because he's in his third year now in the league, and this should be the year now where he does fill out with his strength and his power. Richburg, his strengths are cerebral and technique, okay? He is a bit undersized as a center. He reminds me a lot of the Sean O'Haras and the Bart Oates of the world, who have been Pro Bowl players, who won Super Bowls with the Giants because they were more involved in technique and involved in the mentality of the game. They're not the kinds of centers who are going to overpower you. And in fact, your best defensive tackles in this league, who are 330, 340, and really strong, the Linval Joseph types, those guys, if they square up on a guy like Richburg, they're going to win that battle a number of times strictly because of their girth, their physicality, and their power and strength. That's not the kind of center he is. There will be matchup problems that he has against certain guys in this league, and you just have to live with that. Because against most guys in this league, his technique, his athleticism, and his smarts will give him the advantage. But there will be some guys who are going to be able to overpower him. So your observation is not off the mark, but I think it's something you can live with because the Giants have proven over time they can have these kinds of centers and still win championships.
Okay, and the final observation, again, it's the offensive line, and it's our left tackle. A couple of guys who have played in college, but at a much lower level, a little bit higher than Fordham, Paul. So they're up a little bit higher than that level.
Patriot League, baby. Patriot League.
Yes. They're saying that he looks slow at the snap and that he's not getting his body position or his body into position at the right time and that he's trying to then overcorrect and consequently his feet are out of position. I have no idea what these guys are talking about. I mean, they're jumping up and down, and they're pointing at their, with their martini glasses and saying, look at this guy. Look at him.
Right.
He's not in the right position.
I'm going to make this one really easy for you because the truth of the matter is there's a lot of technique that goes into playing a lot of these positions in the league, but especially left tackle. I could list for you the whole laundry list of what left tackles have to do with the snap. And I could also list you a long list of things that he needs to clean up. We knew he was sloppy with his technique when he came out. We knew he had only played a year and a half in college, so he was going to be somewhat raw. Okay? Here's what I will tell you. There is no question. Your guys are right. He has to polish up his technique. That goes without saying. And what they're talking about is one of only many things that he needs to clean up and get better at. But here's what I will tell you. The last two weekends, he has gone up against Terrell Suggs, yeah, who had two hits and one quarterback sack and did not wreck that game, and Robert Quinn in London, who I believe did nothing in the game.
Yeah, he was not even a factor, though he wasn't 100% too.
Nonetheless.
Still.
So, obviously, in the last 2 weeks, Flowers has done enough, despite still needing more polish, to effectively get the job done and have the Giants win. We can only hope over the second half of the season he cleans up more of that stuff and continues to grow and get better. But I can appreciate the comment.
And, Mike, appreciate the phone call.
I have one more point? Last question for you. Paul, do you think that the way the training camp schedule is constructed now, that it's going to be harder to really coach up a guy like our left tackle?
My friend,
than it was, let's say, 10 years ago.
I could not agree with you more. I have been complaining about this for years, ever since the new CBA came into play. And that's why, for me, when I said, remember Sheriff? Was the guy I wanted to draft that year, and, of course, he was taken by the Redskins. What were the two reasons that I said that would be my primary target if I were the Giants? First reason was he played all 4 years in college. He was experienced. He was polished. He was coached up. Look at the inexperience that Flowers had. He played, 35 less games maybe, whatever it was, than Sheriff did? Or 25 less games, whatever the number was. Brendan Sheriff was much more pro-ready than Eric Flowers could possibly be.
Well, but keep this in mind. Sheriff has solely been used as a guard with the Redskins, not a tackle.
I don't want to do revisiting history.
No, but I'm just bringing that up as a point, though.
I don't want to second guess. What I want to say, when you first guess, you talk about when's a guy ready to be in the league. Well, when he plays at just a year and a half of college, chances are he's not going to be really ready.
The reps. The reps are important. They
add up. It's a big deal.
Yeah.
So yes, I'm with you 1,000%. A real good old-fashioned two-a-day training camp is something that Eric Flowers could have used. And these young guys, they don't develop nearly as quickly as they're supposed to because of the CBA. I am on board with that comment 1,000%.
Well, and here's the other thing to add, and Mike, appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for weighing in. By him having to deal with the ankle injury for the majority of last season, that also stunted his growth.
No
question.
Because
how can you then teach proper technique if you're making up for a leg that's not 100%? So you have to take that into consideration. I'm not saying he's a rookie this year, but the reps where he would have been 100% last year, I think, would have put him in a much better position heading into this season had he not had to deal with the ankle injury.
Yeah.
So that can't be overlooked.
No question.
Big picture here, I know Mike was focusing on specific offensive linemen and technique. You can't overlook the fact that the offensive line in the last two games, as a group, I'm not talking about individuals, Paul, I think has come a long way
in
the last 2 weeks specifically.
Pass blocking, because they were bad in Green Bay.
And the run blocking's been a struggle all season long. They ran for over 100 yards as a team in two of the first three games. The last four, everything has dipped. Go through the numbers. 78 to the 40s to the 30s. It's gone downhill every single game. But pass protection-wise, I think the offensive line has made huge strides over the last 2 weeks. And you can look at the quarterback hits. You look at the opposition they've gone up against. That, I think, has been well documented. Let's head back to the phone lines. We're going to stay in Florida. We got Jacob. Jacob, what's happening?
Hello?
Yes, Jacob. You're on the air. What do you got for us?
I just had a few quick points.
Sure.
I don't know if it's just me that's noticed this, but on third and short, kind of like under 3 yards to go, I feel like we're passing, which I kind of like. But I feel like he's going deeper down the field instead of taking shorter routes. Is that something you guys have noticed?
Well, there was a third and one in the game against the Rams, and they threw down the left sideline to Odell Beckham. So that, I think, emphasizes your point. With that being said, though, there was also a third and goal at the one this past week, and they actually ran it in off the left side with Rashad Jennings, whereas in the Ravens game, if you remember, you had first and goal at the one. After you lose yards on the first running play, they threw. So I think there's been mixed results under those short yardage situations, and that's why it goes back to needing a consistent run game, so that you could punch it in when you're in the red zone. And like you said, you can convert on those short yardage situations. There have been some trends in which they've been facing third and manageables, and they've gone for the home run as opposed to running the football. I don't disagree with your assessment there.
Is that something the defense is doing to like make us try and go over the top instead of taking the easier, shorter route?
Well, I think that's one factor, and I also think it's the fact that, you know, the running game just hasn't been there, and they have not been able to rely on it in those short yarded circumstances. So I think it's the mindset of the offense, and at the same time, it's the defense taking away the opportunities in the trenches. But with that being said, just because you don't think you have an effective run game on third and one doesn't mean you have to necessarily go for a 20-yard pass down the field. What you can do, Jacob, is you can throw it into the flat. You can throw it over the middle within a 5 to 10-yard radius. You know, it's one thing to go for the home run. It's another thing to say, okay, we don't necessarily need to go for the home run. We can still throw in a 3rd-and-1, but we don't necessarily need to necessarily go for 25 or 30-yard gains when all we need is a 4 or 5-yard pickup to move the chains and continue the drive. That, I think, is something that's a little bit more reasonable.
Giants are only 6 of 11 on 3rd-and-1 conversions this year, which is about 12% underneath the NFL average. That's just not good enough.
Yeah, no doubt. The red zone, too. Let's not forget the red zone. They're 5 of 15 since week one when they went 3 for
4. Power running game. Jumbo formation. I'm just saying.
No, running game is critical. I agree with you. What else you got?
A couple more quick points.
Sure.
Just as a football fan, I was wondering, out of shotgun and under center, does running the ball like change up timing with anything? Do you guys know?
You're talking about a direct snap to the running back or with the quarterback still out of the shotgun?
Yes, and then quarterback under center. Does that change
Everything changes the timing. It all does, because from the time that ball is snapped, now you have to figure out exactly what's the timing of the play and the block and how long is the hole going to be open, how long is it going to take for the quarterback to hand the ball to the running back. Then he's got to get going. He's got to accelerate after that step and a half. Now he's got to figure out, okay, is the hole still going to be there? Can they hold up long enough to engage and give me the space I need? Everything's affected by that.
Okay, I just have one more quick question. I'm coming up for the Bengals game.
The
you
Monday
guys,
night game.
Have like a pregame thing outside the stadium, right?
Yeah, that game is going to be a Monday night game, so it's about an 8:30 kickoff. We'll probably be on the air, I think, at 7 p.m. Eastern time. And we're out on the stage, Jacob, at MetLife Central, right by that gate outside of MetLife Stadium.
Look for the Snoopy statue.
Yes, the Snoopy statue should be the easy giveaway. But yes, to answer your question, we're going to do an hour and a half pregame show, around an hour and a half outside the stadium leading up to the game.
Okay, gotcha. Thank you.
It. Not a problem. Appreciate you joining us. And speaking of that contest, just a little tease, since they are going to be honoring a number of Giants who are going into the Ring of Honor, we are expected to be joined by a few of them, including possibly Tom Coughlin, during that pregame show. So for any of you who may be in the vicinity for that game, feel free to stop by the stage at MetLife Central and join in on the fun and the festivities as we get you set for Monday Night Football, Giants and the Bengals. That'll be the second game following the bye. They're going to host the Eagles, then they're going to have the Bengals game, and then the Bears. That's the 3-game homestand immediately following the bye.
Indeed. I'm just looking over.
Oh, that's right.
We have, after that, two other night games, although only the Dallas game is home. Philly's a night game on the road.
Yeah.
And then, of course, the last game in Washington could also be flexed out to a night game, but that won't affect you fans coming out here.
Correct. Indeed, because those are all on the road. 201-939-4513, hashtag Giants chat. Now let's go to a man who has his own introduction, so we'll play it first, and then we will welcome him.
I got a bad feeling about this.
This is
losing his mind.
Mr. Illness.
He wasn't right in the hat.
Enough jokes.
I am happy.
You're mad, man.
And here we go.
Yes, and that means none other than Charlie in Portland, Maine is on the line. Charlie, what's happening?
Hey, gentlemen.
Hello.
Hey, I got a question for you.
See,
guys.
I got your opening, by the way, before the phone call. So I expect
John did yesterday, too.
Oh, he did? All right, because sometimes it's been missed. I just want to emphasize that.
No, yes. I appreciate that.
Okay.
And even though everyone's going to get sick of that intro,
We're already sick of it. You kidding me? They got to pay me extra to even play it.
Hey, on the injured reserve, we've got 7 guys on it.
Okay.
So I was just reading the new rule. The new rule is we don't have to designate who can return.
Yes.
After 6 weeks. Now I'm looking at who's on there, and injured reserve. It can be a guy who got injured reserve on preseason or during the season.
No.
No.
Can't
no.
Be.
No. 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 No.
See,
no.
There's
no,
the
no,
limitations.
No. 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 After the 53 is set for opening day. Which means Will Johnson is not eligible. That's where you were going to go, Charlie.
You knew,
and
he was
I would love
there.
Nothing more than to see Will Johnson active on this team. But that cannot happen by rule. Shane Vereen's probably going to wind up being that guy who comes back, and he'll be back for December.
Yeah, I didn't see that. I just read the new rule, and I didn't. It said preseason. It said during the season. I didn't see it say.
Here's
that
the problem,
if
Charlie.
Was on injured reserve.
Yeah,
preseason,
there was
they
some debate. There was some debate about that, and I questioned it myself. And after going through about 12 hours of emails with the league and with the Giants front office, it was finally confirmed for me that it is only applicable to a guy who was on the 53 as of the final cut. If he was not there, he is not eligible to come back. So Will Johnson is done. Right. And in fact, when I did find that out, I talked to him the first day back here at the facility, and I said, Will, what a shame. He's like, I know. He said, they can't bring me back. And he knew the rule, and he was crushed by it because he was really hoping to help the team.
All right, so Matt LaCrosse is the same?
Same thing.
Same thing?
Done.
Yep.
Done.
So,
gone.
Thompson, the same thing? Miguel Thompson?
Well, Thompson got hurt during the season.
Yeah.
Correct.
So he
could. He's eligible
but
to
why
return.
Would you bring him back instead of Shane Vereen?
Oh, I wouldn't. I'm just trying to see what our options were. How about JT Thomas? Is he a possibility?
JT Thomas got hurt during the season. He's a possibility.
He could come back.
But I don't think based on his surgery that that's something possible because of the significance of his injury.
By the way, just so you know, Vereen, who had the tear, his sleeve that he had been using for rehab is off. So he is doing well. He told me he's on schedule. He's of the belief that he's got a real good chance to make it back for the final month. So that would be where I'd be holding out my hope.
Okay. And now I read on the rule it said 6 weeks. So that's just 6 weeks they can come back and practice?
6 weeks to practice, 8 weeks to be active.
Okay. Okay. So that's still the same.
Yeah, what's changed with the rule,
that's
Charlie?
That's what I was wondering with that because I was hoping that maybe Johnson could come back. Then we'd have our fullback.
Oh, tell me about it.
I guess that's not going to
happen. The timing
right?
of that. What's mainly, Charlie, what I was going to say is what changed in the rule from last year to this year is last year when you placed the guy on IR, you had to immediately designate who was going to return. Now you could sort of wait a few weeks, see who else gets hurt, and then all of a sudden determine who you want to bring back. So that's why you have much more flexibility this year as opposed to what you did in previous
Charlie, you know, we got Henry Hanaska here in the Giants PR office during the course of the season. We got a better chance of activating him. Although he's been beaten up, I don't know if he wants any more pounding, but we got a better chance of activating him for the Philadelphia Eagles game than Will Johnson, who is just simply not eligible anymore.
Yeah, no, that's too bad. But, look, at least McAdoo is talking about looking at things, which is a little bit hopeful.
Well, you need to.
And hopefully that jumbo package will end up coming into play. And I know we're not going to go out and get a Joe Thomas, which I think we should, but we won't. And so I think we're stuck with everybody we get. But at least we can start playing a few different players. For one, Perkins ended up actually with more snaps than Rainey did last week.
Yeah.
So to me, that's a sign of that he's kind of moving up.
I agree.
You know,
that's
a bit.
Fair.
And so that, I think, is going to be a plus for that. And I'm not down on McAdoo yet. I mean, I'm going to wait at least until the end of the year, but definitely wait until after this Philly game. We always play awful after a bye, at least under Coughlin we did. I don't know, our record is not very good after a bye.
I understand.
So I am hoping that that's going to change this week, that with 2 weeks, that he will come out, we won't be flat, we'll come out and we'll beat Philly. And to me, that will be a great start. And if he does, then I'll give McAdoo a lot of credit. If we end up doing the same thing after buys like most of the times we do, then I'll have a problem. But until then, I got to give McAdoo some time. And hopefully we can beat Philly. Because my feeling is after that week, we might have a three-way tie. We might be 5-3.
Could
Philly
be.
Will be 5-3.
Could be.
And Dallas could be 5-3.
And you know, Charlie, honestly, and if you want to pin your hopes on something good about that, look, if you can't get up for the Philadelphia Eagles, all right, seriously, if you can't get up for the Eagles in the middle of a division race, then something's not right with you as a player. So, I mean, I actually think it's a plus that they're playing Philly coming out of the bye instead of Cincinnati or Chicago. I'd much rather play a team in the division because that gets guys' attention.
Well, with that being said, though, just to be balanced, remember, last year they were playing the Redskins coming off the bye, and I would have made the same argument, Paul.
The team wasn't as talented as it is this year.
No doubt, but I'm just saying, you know, on paper, I don't think it matters who the opponent is. You figure you're fresh. You got 2 weeks. You're coming off two straight wins. You should be ready to go no matter what, regardless of the opponent.
Home. And it's at home game too.
Correct? Home game too.
Absolutely.
There are no excuses, Charlie. They got to come out and they got to play gangbusters against the Eagles.
Yeah,
be good.
So.
Yeah.
Thanks, guys.
You got it, Sean. Appreciate the phone call.
Yep.
That was the most agreeable I think he's ever been.
I know. You took the words right out of my mouth. Not only that, but there was barely a hint of O-line on that phone call.
Get rid of the horror show. He's just changed his entire aura.
Yeah.
In the matter of one phone call.
It was very relaxed.
He had a pretty good phone call yesterday, too.
He did?
Yeah.
So that's two straight days in a row.
He's making sense.
No, but here's the question. Did yesterday involve the offensive line, though?
Yeah, but...
you lose points.
Making sense.
But the minute the O-line comes in, you lose points. That's an automatic minus. See, today...
You and John just want to hate on him.
Well, listen.
When he makes sense, I give him credit.
It's a very rare sentence that you use sense and Charlie in the same sentence. But I'm glad that you were able to pull it off.
Okay.
Only during the bye week can you pull that off. That was impressive, though, under the circumstances.
All right.
Let's take a look at some tweets here before we wrap up shop.
I know
a lot
of
people
here
wanted to weigh in who may have not been able to join in via the phone call, but we certainly appreciate everybody sticking with us. A little bit later start because of the media veils today. We had to push the show back slightly, but we are going to be back on tomorrow normal time.
Correct.
At noon. So you don't have to adjust your schedules and so forth. We're going to be back to the normal spot tomorrow as we move forward here to get you set for the bye week. But I do want to work in a few tweets here. I know a number of people, like I said, who didn't have a chance to get to the phones, still may have some questions and so forth about what the Giants are going to do. I am slowly bringing it up. This computer is not functioning. Here we go. See, just as you brought that up, it seemed to appear. All right, let's take a look here. Davin at Dave ST247. What teams are running the West Coast system successfully this year, if not the Green Bay Packers? Well, the Kansas City Chiefs use a West Coast type of system with Andy Reid, and they have had mixed results, but if you look at their running numbers, it's been by far more consistent than some of the other teams that we've seen using the West Coast system. So, I mean, there are examples of teams that have had success, but here's the thing. Andy Reid hasn't been in KC as long as Mike McCarthy's been in Green Bay. So the point was, it's not so much that the West Coast system can't work. The point is, when you are in a specific spot for consecutive years, like a Mike McCarthy, you wonder, does the opposition get a better idea of what you're running based on the personnel groupings? That was the point that we raised in conjunction with Mike McCarthy and so forth. But Kansas City's a team that runs the West Coast system with Andy Reid. He's part of that branch that came from the San Francisco 49ers, everybody who was under Bill Walsh and so forth. So that is at least an example that comes to mind. Johnny's very optimistic about the Giants-Eagles matchup already. At JP Headin 1-2-3, Wentz won't stand a chance against the Giants after the bye.
Okay.
That's a pretty definitive statement.
It is.
Well, real quickly before we wrap up here, and I know we're going to get a lot into the Eagles next week, but...
By the way, no show Thursday or Friday. The Giants' offices are closed, so anything you want to say about this game, you got to get it in tomorrow.
Correct.
Otherwise, you wait till next Monday.
And we will. We'll look a little bit ahead to Philadelphia tomorrow, in addition to talking about some of the themes that the Giants are going to work on and focus on during the bye week, as well as recapping the Rams. But just real quickly, in terms of the Eagles, you brought up their identity. Special teams can't be overlooked, and I agree with you 100%. But I also think there's two other facets that are important to note about the Philadelphia Eagles heading into this season, Paul, was the fact that Jim Schwartz has really helped turn around this defense after they had struggled over the last few years.
Yes.
The secondary and the front seven seem to be clicking very nicely. And then on the flip side, you know, Carson Wentz, I know he had two interceptions against the Vikings,
but he's played well.
And you have to give him credit, considering he's a rookie quarterback.
By the way, the number one quarterback in the draft, according to my rankings coming out, I thought that the Rams looking at Goff was a mistake. I thought Wentz was the best guy coming out. You remember I also thought David Carr was going to be the best quarterback coming out when he came out. He
looks like Derek Carr or
Derek Carr? Derek Carr. Derek Carr has turned out to be really good. I also told you folks that Russell Wilson was a system quarterback. Nobody wanted to listen to me. Guess what? He's struggling this year. And people are like, what happened to Russell Wilson? You know what happened?
He's dealing with a knee injury, though, too.
Yeah, and Marshawn Lynch retired. And it's just not the same anymore because
he's
a system quarterback. I'm pretty good at not nailing these QBs. But go ahead.
You're patting yourself on the
back? Absolutely.
Should we add five more minutes to the program to do that?
I caught too much grief when I said these things when they were unpopular. I told you that RG3 wasn't going to last either. Guess what? He hasn't lasted.
With that being said, that will wrap up today's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. We appreciate everybody who chimed in via the phone lines as well as on Twitter. We'll get to more of your phone calls, more of your tweets tomorrow. Remember, Big Blue Kickoff Live back to its normal time, noon Eastern on Wednesday. No show Thursday, no show Friday. And then we'll resume our normal schedule on Monday at noon Eastern as well. Enjoy the rest of your Tuesday. For all the latest, you can head to Giants.com as we'll continue to cover the team throughout the course of the bye week. For Paul DeTino, I'm Lance Meadow. Have a good one right here on Giants.com.